Well,
Okay, I'm
welcome.
going to call the meeting to order. It is right now, I have to look. It is 3:06 and I call the meeting to order. I welcome everybody to the May PHAC meeting. And I cannot see which, oh, Sarah's here. My co-chair is here with me and I'm looking to see who is here. So what we're going to do is we're going to do welcome. And Jessica, I'm going to need your help as we introduce the PHAC commissioners. I'm going to start myself off and then I pass it to my co-chair. My name is Felicia Tripp and I'm one of your co-chairs for the PHAC Advisory Commission. And with that, I turn it over to Sarah.
Thank you. I'm Sarah Stevenson. I'm one of the co-chairs as well. And I know that another commissioner, Steph Condor, is here. So I'm going to pass to her.
Hi, not doing the camera today because I look amazing. Hi, I'm here. I use she, her pronouns, Steph Condor with Related Northwest. Happy to be here.
All right. And Felicia, that is everybody. That is us for today.
Oh, geez. Now, I remember years ago, we talked about we had to have a certain number of people or they had to. Do you remember this, Sarah, that people couldn't miss so many meetings a year? Do you remember this?
I do. And I think, I do remember that. We had a brief discussion about that in the executive committee about kind of, you know, rebooting or what we could do around that.
Until then, Steph, okay, I'm going to turn it over to Molly, who is next on the docket.
Okay.
Well, first, do we have any public testimony?
Oops, sorry about that.
There was not any.
Perfect. Okay, perfect. Then that was perfect, Felicia. We'll turn it back over to Molly Rogers.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Molly Rogers. I go by she, her pronouns. I'm the interim director of the Housing Bureau. Thank you for the three of you joining you. I do think we want to have a little bit of discussion around the future of PHAC and make sure we are providing the right amount of information and the information to advance the housing policies for Portland and give you guys all the advocacy working that you need to do and have the right work plan. So there is a lot happening at the city writ large related to charter reform and a lot of conversations with how do we better align with our service area bureaus. That work is underway with the first milestone really being a holistic budget that encapsulates our four service areas. And that's Bureau of Development Services, Prosper Portland, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and the Portland Housing Bureau. So along with budget means having to understand where all your program offers all come together as part of those packages and service areas. So there's sort of the budgeting work will need to commence here in the fall as we do that work. And then I think there'll be questions that come soon after that around, we've got various different budget advisory committees and we have various ways that give us input and feedback, and that will certainly come with another set of potential conversations we need to have with our other bureaus and how we work with you all to see if there's, you know, do we do a cluster back or whatever comes out of that. So a lot of questions and a lot of, I wish I had more answers other than we're in full on planning mode of the various potential changes that could happen to the bureau. At the same time, we keep moving on dozens of projects and coming up on closing on six in the next 2 months. We just closed with one with Steph on Friday. We're working with, so congrats to everyone. At the same time, we continue to work on a recalibration work of inclusionary housing. And we got to a part, I believe I updated you all last time that as part of our new service area portfolio with Commissioner Rubio, we have done some additional analyses to broaden the scope of inclusionary housing, realizing inclusionary housing is one of many levers and components of building housing. And we wanted to have the direct, we wanted to have the broader picture that comes as you guys build housing. So we understand how inclusionary housing sits within all those other potential code components and process approvals with BDS. So, and I've got Christina Gann here from Commissioner Rubio's office. Christina, do you want to show your hand? There's Christina. If you wouldn't mind putting up this slide deck, Jesse, and or I guess.
No problem. Give me just a moment.
You doing it? I wanted to just say, let you all know that we have two more meetings that we're scheduling for inclusionary housing. And part of the work that we're doing is really looking at economic prototypes around feasibility that encapsulates what they call sort of the top five cost drivers that will help sort of inform where are those projects where you guys are getting the biggest sort of cost impacts, and then better understanding inclusionary housing. But so that work is not done yet. That work is going to be working through June. So we, and then our final meeting will be actually going into recommendations related to project feasibility and the trade-offs of inclusionary housing. So we're hoping to be able to update you all in the fall on where those potential recommendations will be going to potentially city council and potentially even the county commission and also planning commission if we're going down that route. And of course, want to get your input in that landmark policy. We did have a meeting last Friday that got through some recommendations on the administrative components of the inclusionary housing. We got a lot of agreement and alignment with the committee on things around reasonable equivalency. So things that were less reliant on the economic prototypes, but we're hearing could make a huge difference in the flexibility of the program as you guys are building projects and understanding the applicability and inclusionary housing in that. So lots of, we can update you guys along the way, but I also wanted to let you know that we've been doing a lot of work to try to better understand our current landscape in terms of the various funding opportunities we have in front of us. And just wanted to see if, before I actually get into some of the coordinating public funding, I'm gonna actually send it out over to Christina to give you an update of all the various studies that we're working on with our various service area bureaus. So you can see how it's all coming together and dovetailing one another. Christina?
Yeah, hi, thank you, Molly. And I guess one of the perils of Zoom meeting is I'm meeting a lot of you for the first time and you are looking at a slide instead of each other's faces, but so it goes, but I'm really happy to be here today. Just a quick introduction. My name is Christina Gann. I'm a Workforce Commissioner Carmen Rubio here at the City of Portland and do work related to policy work related to housing and planning and all types of things related to the spaces that you all focus on. So glad to have some opportunity to interact with you all. I've been on the commissioner's team just for a couple of months. And before that, worked for the mayor on the mayor's team for about a year. And before that, I was in Seattle. So if you are like, who is this person and where did they come from? That I appeared out of the ether about a year, just over a year ago in Portland. And so just sort of making my rounds, slowly getting to know everyone and all the great work happening here. So I'm gonna provide a couple updates on some of the things that, as Molly shared, that our office is working closely with the team at the Housing Bureau, as well as Planning, Prosper, and Development Services. Jesse, can you go on to the next slide? I have just a teeny bit more detail broken out on some of this stuff. Cool. Looks like I made the changes so recently that they have not saved. They're not loading correctly, but that is okay. All right, so I'll just go through a couple of the things that I think Molly mentioned. One is that a council's direction, the PHB team are working with a consultant, BAE, the same consultant who was doing the IH calibration work. and they are looking at overall construction costs in Portland, both hard, soft, land, kind of the main categories of costs. And they're comparing that to what some of our peer cities are experiencing. It's always tricky to define who our peer cities are, but for the purposes of the study, we chose Seattle, Sacramento, and Denver. And so they're reaching out to the folks up there to get a good sense of what those look like, and expect to have that information back in the next, I think, two-ish months. So they're also doing another body of work for us that was kind of informed by a recent survey that the Bureau of Development Services did. I don't know if, you know, some of you may have received it. Is at this point, probably, I want to say maybe 2 months ago, BDS sent out this public survey asking for feedback on which local city regulations and policies have impacted people's ability to build housing in Portland. Very open-ended type of question. They provided some potential regulations, and then people could fill in, you know, additional information. And so that went out to both for-profit developers, nonprofit, other community members, architects, you know, city staff. I think we got about 700 responses, maybe 600 responses total. And then from that, we identified the top 10 responses. And so we're going to look into, dig into some of the policy details on those a little bit, and see if we might want to consider, updating those rules to reduce the barriers, the impact that they have on housing construction here in Portland. So that's one kind of body of work from our multi-bureau portfolio here. And then we also picked a couple of those local regulations that we're going to study, have our consultant at the city study to understand how each one specifically drives up the cost of residential construction. And so the ones that we're going to be looking at, we have five policies. So the first is bike parking. The second is first floor active use requirements, ground floor, you know, active use requirements, which apply in certain parts of the city. Right-of-way improvements, kind of PBOT and right-of-way infrastructure improvements. We wanted to have one process-specific requirement, and so that we could isolate pretty cleanly in comparison with other steps in the permit process. So we're going to look at design review, and then also other associated fees and charges that come in as part of the permit process. So like system development charges and other kind of related, like we need to, pay into a fund to mitigate impacts, those types of things. And so those five policies, we're going to study, try to figure out like to a dollar value amount, what is that? How does that impact certain types of development? And we're looking at everything ranging from a townhouse project, like a kind of, you know, rip scale project, to a central city tower. And we also specifically chose one development type that's a common affordable housing kind of building type. So like a 3 to 4 story, sort of 90 to 100 units type of apartment building, which is, I think, a pretty common type of development that the Housing Bureau funds through like the Portland Housing Bond or the Metro Bond and things like that. And so they're doing that work now. And again, we should have those findings in the next 2 to 3 months. So super excited about that. Actually, 2 to 3 months. I think it'll be interesting to see what we learn from that study. I think it'll inform the broader context. And then, because I'm a planner, I love data, wanted to share with you all, in case you're interested in this, PHB staff have been working with the staff at the Planning Bureau, BPS, to forecast our future housing needs here in Portland. Not just the total number of units that we need, which is kind of common practice for as part of our comp plan work, but breaking it out by various income bands. So, you know, how many additional housing units are we going to need at like 0 to 30% AMI? How many additional are we going to need at the 30 to 60, you know, 80 to 120, et cetera, and at 120 and above? So we can see as we start to consider tools that the city controls to influence what types of homes get built here in Portland, that we can understand how they fit into the broader context of our housing ecosystem and how we can make sure we have housing for everyone that needs it. At least that's the goal. So that's the housing needs assessment. I believe a draft of that will be out again in the next about 2 months. That will be helpful, I think, background and context for everyone. I'll say, I mean, I'm guessing that you all in this room, some of that is not going to be a surprise to you, but I think having some real numbers will help kind of frame the conversation. And then the last thing I want to flag for you all for awareness is the city's housing production strategy. Those of you who track these conversations closely are probably well aware of this. This is there's a state requirement that Portland and other jurisdictions basically take the information that we learned from the housing needs assessment, you know, understand like all of our forecasted housing growth. And then we have to come up with a list of the things that we are doing and the things that we're going to do to make sure that we can reach that level of new home construction. And so it really is the full suite of tools available to us from, you know, obviously we directly subsidize with like bond money and other things, you know, low income kind of capital A affordable housing. And we also have a variety of other ways that we influence other housing production, ranging from incentives or even just regulations, you know, like zoning code and those regulations. And so that is going to be probably a year-long conversation that is going to start up in earnest this summer. Expect there'll be some stakeholder outreach and engagement this summer and fall. And so there might be opportunities for groups like you all who obviously hold a lot of expertise to help inform the types of things that end up on that list in terms of what we as a city can do in this space. So that is a lot, I know, just wanted to walk through some of the key, what I think are key kind of background work and bodies of work that we're doing right now to really start teeing up very real conversations this summer with the public and with electeds and just, you know, I would say as a community about where we're going in the housing market. So I'm happy to answer any questions folks have and just wanted you to have some situational awareness there. And we can keep the slide up, or if you want to pull it down so you can see faces, that's fine too. I'm just staring at a PowerPoint slide. There we go. Thank you.
Any questions before we let Christina go? Is there any questions? Well, thank you, Christina, for your presentation. And with that, Molly, I don't see Leslie here, but it looks like you are still on the docket to present. So I turn it back over to you, Molly.
Thanks. I just wanted to just see if maybe Christina could spend a little bit of time, you know, how we want to engage with PHAC with all these various studies and of course, we need the input from you all to help inform our strategies and our needs analysis going forward. Mm-hmm. Christina, do you want to add a little bit more to that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say some of this stuff is just like literally consultant studies that we're doing. I think really where the conversations will start to get real is later on this summer when we take all the information we learn from the IH calibration study, you know, from all these other consultant things and from the housing needs assessment, all this data. And then we have to start talking to each other about, okay, like how far are we from, being a place where, we can build the right amount and the right types of homes that allow everyone who wants to live here and who currently lives here to have a home here. And so I think this summer is when we'll start doing kind of targeted stakeholder engagement and outreach on the housing production strategy. I think we'll probably end up having some sort of like council work session, maybe midsummer to go through all the findings and go through all the data. And then it really becomes like, okay, what are the tools? And the conversation will shift more into what types of things we want to and we can do. And I think that would be, obviously we want to bring you guys up to speed on all of the things we found through this foundational work, but then also really we'll be interested in hearing people's perspectives on what the tools are that we control and how we can have a housing production strategy that reflects our goals and our values.
And Steph has a question for you, but one of the things that works really well that I've seen in the past for this particular committee is if you ask us very specific questions and give us what those questions will lead to. So the outputs and the outcomes that you need as far as feedback from this committee, that really works, because Jess or Norma can send us that via email. And we're really good at providing feedback that way as well, Christina. And with that, Steph, I turn it over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Christina, for your overview. I think a needs assessment is great. And I just wonder, I muted myself, what are you going to also be kind of assessing some of the funding that, you know, the state is, you know, putting together quite a bit of funding for housing. And I'm wondering how or if you'll be looking at that in this analysis to see, you know, how some of that funding might be utilized. You know, I've heard that there's like a middle market housing type of funding that's coming. And, you know, I think about the different types of housing that you may identify as needed, and maybe doing an assessment on that funding and how it works or how it could potentially be used in the city of Portland. Is that anything y'all are going to be looking at?
Yeah, definitely. I think one whole kind of category of funding in my mind is like, who do we write checks to, right? Obviously we don't literally write checks, but who do we kind of directly finance through subsidy? And there are tools that we know that we have currently, and there may be additional tools or additional resources that come out of the state legislative session. I would say your question is a great bridge to Molly's next kind of update, which is about that topic. And we have a historical amount of state funding flowing into Oregon communities. What opportunities does that provide for us toward meeting our local objectives and our shared statewide objectives? But yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, there's always going to be a version of this where we need sustained, considerable public investment to build the amount of subsidized affordable housing that we need. And so that's going to be a big piece of it, but it's not going to be the only piece, because we know we also need the middle income housing and just the full spectrum. And so again, just for each bucket of housing that we need, what are the levers that we control and how can we kind of strategically and equitably kind of shape what those levers look like? Great question.
Yeah, that is a great segue to the potential around how do we best align our various different funding streams that we have? Because as you all know, it takes many, many, many funding sources to get a project to come to fruition. And the fact that we have multiple competitions and with our scarce resources means you all are waiting for that next competition to apply. And it could potentially delay projects for 1 to 2 years just by virtue of that not being fully aligned. I think just to also want to acknowledge the governor is very much interested in all housing strategies. There's a local recognition at city council that we need to spearhead housing production writ large. Work with the city council is in making sure that we really look at income strata, we look at where the unmet need is, and it keeps showing that we have the greatest need at the 0 to 30 levels. But I think there is a recognition that our housing production strategy needs to show how we get a robust housing production for all income levels. And then of course that gets into around strategies of how do you target certain income levels where we see where the greatest needs are. So along those same lines, Jesse, if you wouldn't mind putting those slides back up.
Thanks, Molly. And yeah, I hear you, Felicia, that in the future, I think when we have Bureau staff come back to talk about the housing production strategy work, we'll have more specific kind of questions to get feedback on. This was as much of just an update of you all on everything we've been doing. So thanks for bearing with me there. It's been a pleasure having some time with all of you.
Thanks, Christina. I know you have to leave early, but how about next slide? So as we know, there's the governor is putting a mark and saying housing and homelessness are her one of her highest priorities. So right now the legislature is looking at the potential of over $900 million in LIFT, which is their local general obligation bond program. It can be for a variety of uses, rental development, permanent supportive housing, affordable homeownership, and rural development. And then, of course, generally, as you know, these resources tend to get paired with private activity bonds, just like our housing bonds or tax increment financing also tends to leverage private activity bonds when you use the 4% tax credit program. So about $900 million for a private activity bond. So we're talking, you know, in the billions of resources going towards new housing with a very robust goal of trying to create 36,000 more units, half of which would be directly subsidized. Next slide. You guys know this all too well. You live and breathe this. You're cobbling together, assembling multiple sources. This is just acknowledging some are administered by the state and some of these sources are administered at the local level. Generally, our projects are a blend of equity, generally through the low-income housing tax credit program, a debt component, and gap financing. So we've all had historic levels of new resources over the last 5 years between the voter-approved bond measures as well as the state's LIFT program. And so we know that this is, we did, even though we have a lot of resources, these aren't always necessarily aligned in the way that makes it easy for you guys to do one stop competing. And then when we do permanent supportive housing, we try to line up services dollars as well. So the systems can be responsive to the population needs as you guys are pulling together projects that combine capital, operating, and services funding. Next slide. So we've been talking and we've been hearing from many, many folks in different arenas, the need to do more alignment. So here are some examples we've come up with that shows that alignment is possible. We are doing some alignment. It's possible we could do even more. As you all know, we do joint solicitations with Home Forward using their Section 8 voucher program and the joint office and their services funding that they go to providers. And then we have also seen, because with COVID, new ways that the state has sub-allocated their LIFT resources to the Metro Bond projects. Because a lot of those Metro Bond projects were getting stalled out just like the rest of the state's projects were doing. And they recognize that there could be a way to more quickly deploy those resources to those jurisdictions in the metro region to get those pipelines get those projects through the pipeline quickly. And then generally the LIFT pairs very well with private activity bonds. And so when we have more predictability of the use of LIFT, we tend to have a better predictability of the use of private activity bonds, and we can shepherd a pipeline across the whole state in a way that makes sure we're maximizing the use of PAVs, as well as creates more predictability for you all of when your project's gonna close. And then of course, when we leverage each other's resources, we tend to have less subsidy per unit from our respective pots, and we're able to leverage each other's strengths even more. So I just wanna actually open up this time. Next slide, Jesse. Open up this time and just, a little bit more benefits. Go back one, please. There we go. Some other things that we've learned from some of these examples is that when we are much more coordinated with Metro and we're coordinated with the state, we can do a little bit more flexing when projects do get to a point where they aren't able to reach financial close because they're seeing unprecedented gaps at the end. It gets into those conversations around what's our role as PHB, as a funder? Are we always the first ones in? How do we work with you all to be responsive when projects need more resources towards the end? Other ways that we've seen more benefits is really reduction in potential application costs. We know that it can cost $7,500 per application. That's a huge amount of waste, frankly, and we could be better aligned and so forth to reduce that. And then, of course, how do we be more responsive to the local needs? There's a lot of work that we've done to try to advance racial equity, or the work we do with North and Northeast Housing Strategy. We want to make sure when we're better aligned with other funders that they understand how those programs were meant to operate and to get to deeper affordability when we are able to bring in more vouchers. So I just wanted to open it up and hear your, there's a lot of talk, a lot of work happening with the Housing Production Advisory Committee. Those are mostly developers. They're private rate and affordable developers. Raise your hand if you're on that committee. Anyone here?
I believe Ernesto is. He's not with us today.
Yeah, Ernesto is on that. So they've been having conversations around alignment and also production strategies, and just wanted to create some space for you all to hear from you of what could we be doing more, what could we be advocating, what could PHAC potentially be advocating to the state around better alignment. Steph?
Yeah, I think I really like what you said about aligning with the state. I think that is going to be critical. Reducing the amount of NOFAs that we have to go through, you know, my preference would be for the state to allocate a certain amount of money to Portland Housing Bureau and let you all administer it. You know, I think that amount of funding at the state level is going to be very challenging for them to disperse all of it efficiently. Portland Housing Bureau is very adept at working with a lot of different types of funding and has worked with Lyft and has a pretty good streamlined process. So that's my vote. that obviously we don't get to say what they do, but I really do hope that they recognize how, you know, based on your Portland housing bond and how successful it was, I hope you use that and point to that of like, you exceed your goals, you meet your deadlines. You know, and you can do the same with this funding. Also hoping that, you know, if they did allocate to you, that it would come with a portion of private activity bonds, because you can't have one without the other. And now that that funding is, you know, competitive, the 4% are competitive, that, you know, we need to be aligning, you know, the funding along with that. What else can I tell you in that, you know, I, you know, like I indicated, I am interested in understanding this middle market funding that I've heard about. I don't understand it. I would love to have somebody enlighten me on how this is supposed to work and what they're targeting. To me, that type of funding is really for urban areas that could achieve 80 to 120% rents. There's a lot of markets that just is not even viable, but Portland is certainly a market in which that could utilize that funding and make those deals work, I suspect, depending on where it's located in Portland. So I do hope that you all are really looking closely at that, because that could be a great way to bring a broader spectrum of housing into the Portland area, you know, where we have the missing middle. And I think that would be a great opportunity to look at and to be able to pioneer it and pilot something for them to see like what's best practices. How does this money work? What are some things that we should think of, like maybe pitch to them doing a pilot project? And you know, understanding, I think lastly, what Portland Housing Bureau has left with their Metro bond money and what the game plan is there. And are you planning to, you know, couple it with some of this other funding or stretch it, or, you know, what's the game plan? How much is left? what do you plan on doing with it? When does it go out? And how does it align with the state funding potentially to maximize what you're trying to do here? And that's it. Thanks.
That's great. That's a whole slate of really concrete recommendations. I think go a long way. Obviously, it's we need your voice, and we need you guys to be our messengers on this. All right, Sarah.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with everything Steph said. Two things I was thinking of. One, I think PHB over the last year or so has done a really phenomenal job of modeling exactly this kind of nimbleness, you know, like kind of deploying state funds in an effective way and saving the applicants, developers, some of the headache of trying to figure out which pots and what color of money will work in a project. It's very similar to the kind of pipeline requests that the nonprofit community's been making for over a decade. You know, just saying if funders could just, you know, approve a project and say this meets a need here, and we will figure out how to get it funded. I feel like you guys have been demonstrating that recently, and it's been an unusual circumstance, but it has given us the opportunity to say it can work, and I'll say from our perspective, it has definitely made things easier. I think from the developer's perspective, instead of having to apply multiple rounds to multiple pots to have all the money consolidated at PHB, and you all say this works in this project, and the timing of this works here, and these federal constraints work at this site but not this site. You know, I think that's a model that we could build on. And then one other idea, and seeking a little bit of flexibility in a funding pot, would be around trying to respond to market opportunities. Right now, there isn't a great way for us to go out and buy a building because it takes so long to queue up the funding, and we'd have to have site control. You've probably heard this from other folks. I've heard a lot of buzz about this in a lot of different spaces. And I've been trying to talk to actually Matt Schaubel with the state about it. I think he's hearing it too. There are buildings under construction right now that may have a hard time coming out and converting and stabilizing. And equity partners are nervous. And there are some opportunities for us to buy new buildings empty, but the funding pots that we have access to and the timing of those opportunities don't really line up with the market opportunities. So along the lines of what Steph was suggesting around a pilot or something like that, maybe we could seek a flex fund pilot to demonstrate that we might be able to make that work. Thank you.
Any other feedback?
Felicia, I can't hear you.
Oh, I was going to say, is there any other feedback from the group?
I think we'll come back to this. We'll have a conversation about whether we have a July meeting or not. If we do, I could see this being a big topic. If we don't, then we may need to do some things through email and or, you know, wait till fall. But this is the session's happening now, and that will conclude in the next month or two. So.
Mm-hmm. And Molly, I think that if we can try to make it fit in July, I think this would be a good conversation. I think it needs more of the PHAC members here to have more of a robust conversation, in my opinion. So maybe even if we had a smaller Zoom meeting, of course, that focuses on this, I think might be helpful, you know, just on this topic and just focus on this for maybe a July meeting because we are in session.
I think that's an excellent idea. Chair Tripp.
Yeah,
that sounds great. We should, Jesse can follow up with y'all.
Yep. Steph?
I think that, I mean, time is of the essence, and this funding is happening very dynamic. And, you know, I think that I vote for a July meeting, depending on when in July, right? Yep. So I'm going to be out some of it, but I would love to attend. So I don't know if you guys can put out like a doodle poll to see when folks can come.
I would recommend.
Yep. Agreed.
Sounds good. Well, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jesse and Leslie to talk about some work planning and other thoughts about summer and fall.
Okay. Oh, there's Leslie. Hi. So Leslie or Jess, do you want to take over?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. I'm having problems with my internet. I'm not sure if they're working on it or what, but it has been cutting out all day today. So I'm on my phone, which is a little more difficult for me to see. We at the Bureau are in conjunction with the charter reform, charter change that it's going to be happening, are looking at all of our advisory committees and really wanting to ensure that we are supporting the volunteers and the people that are giving their time in valuable work, valuable input, and that we are utilizing everyone's skills and abilities to the best that we can. And that we can cross-pollinate groups a little bit better. When I started at the Bureau, we had two advisory committees. We had PHAC and FHAC. And now we have those two and the North Northeast Oversight Committee, and we have the Bond Oversight Committee, and we have Renter Services. And those very specific committees have pulled away some of the work that would have gone to PHAC, and how do we reintegrate the work into PHAC so that there is an overarching advisory committee that's hearing everything and being able to give to understand everything that's going on in the Bureau, and that everything is not so dispersed. So we are, over the next couple of months going to be working on how do we accomplish that, along with the Office of Civic Life. And just wanted to give you a heads up that we're working on it, and that we'll be bringing things back to you as we put together some plans, and hopefully we will come out the other side with a stronger advisory council that covers all of those things. We don't know what it's going to look like yet, so I'm not going to say consolidation. I'm not going to speculate as to what it might look like, but we wanted you all to know that we are looking at it. We've heard your feedback and your concern at the things that have been said in multiple committees about not sure what your role is, how do you provide relevant feedback. And so all of that being said, hope that made sense. I felt like I was kind of rambling a little bit, but always open to feedback. And if you have questions, let me know. And Jesse, I didn't know if you wanted to jump in and add anything.
No, I think that's, unless there are questions, I think that was a great summary. That's not true. I'm going to take that back already. That we have definitely heard the feedback that I've been hearing, that we've been hearing from feedback from PHAC. And Leslie just mentioned, we've also heard from, some of our other committees. And just to underscore that, we've heard you, and, we are taking some actionable efforts.
Well, yeah, what I would recommend is when you guys come back with actionable or feedback or recommendation, bring it to us. I think that would be great. you know, so I noticed in the agenda, Leslie and Jess, for this part, when I read the agenda, it says summer hiatus and fall retreat. So are we looking, I mean, besides this meeting that we just said for July for people that are helping with what we just talked about previously, are we looking at hiatus then for all of the committees? I'm just trying to make sure I loop back to the agenda.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
So we initially were thinking that we would, that you would take June, July, and August off.
Okay.
And then come back with a September retreat. But based on all of the things that we've got coming, several items that we want your feedback on, we really aren't going to be able to take July. You know, we really are going to need your feedback in July. So, but we are still planning to do some kind of retreat in September. So that part is still accurate. But we're not planning for you to take the whole summer off.
Okay. And I know one of the things I think that will be helpful in July is if we really focus the agenda on the actionable feedback requests that you need, like that feedback loop, because that will be in what you want from this committee. And so people know, and I would make the meeting no more than, if you can, 60 minutes, because that's what seems to be really hard in the summer to get people to give up the nicest month of the year to come into a meeting. So I figure if we say we just need you for 60 minutes, we can maybe get some people there.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. That's what I see, Leslie, that has worked for me to get people to come in July.
Yeah, no, I understand, you know, and then just planning around people being on vacation is the other thing. So trying to ensure that we have enough folks there to give feedback, and maybe we do, you know, two 1 hour sessions on different days, and between the two, we can capture everybody. We'll look at what makes the most sense.
Okay. And then also I would recommend, if you want us for the fall retreat, right, is make sure you block off the time and the date for the fall retreat is what I would recommend. So that was the only other thing I would say.
Okay.
Is sooner than later, if you can like pick and see if people will, you know, send out a doodle poll for that too, you know, so that we get that, and how many hours you need for that. Because the retreat implies longer amount of time.
Yeah, well, we're probably looking at least 4 hours, maybe longer. So we will, Jesse and I will put our heads together and start working out and figure out what is going to be, and figure out a couple of different dates for in September after school starts. And yes, I hope that it's in person as well, Sarah. That will be our plan. But we will provide a hybrid option, but ask for people, you know, to prioritize being in person if at all possible. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, thank you so much, you all. And have a great rest of your afternoon. I'm going to go off camera and save my whatever's going on with my internet.
Okay. Sarah, you want to close us out? You have anything you want to add?
No, I just unmuted so that I could say farewell to everyone. Jesse, are we done? Is there anything that we need to tag on? Or Molly, are we ready to wrap?
Unless any of you have any, you know, final thoughts, questions, anything like that. You know, we kind of went through everything we had. Yeah, Steph, I see your hand.
Can anybody share with like what the remaining Metro bond dollars are and what the plan is for that? Or is that?
We are doing some planning work with the commissioner's office to essentially finalize the remaining Metro bond funds. I'm going to turn over to Jill for additional updates.
Okay.
Oops. Can you all hear me? I'm not sure if I'm on here or not. thanks, Steph. And I think right now we're showing we have over $60 million. A lot is dependent on whether or not the reserves we have set aside for the projects that's closing under the Metro bonds will be completely used. We have made, so if those are not used, then it could be potentially higher than the over 60 million. And as Molly mentioned, we are planning for some of those and it could be for some of the large projects that's already in the pipeline with, I think everyone knows that PHB has made certain commitments with regard to redevelopment of a downtown site. May happen, may not happen, we're not sure. But right now, as Molly says, those are all in the planning process right now.
Okay, so 60 million, you have some set aside, you said reserves for closing the deals that you have in the pipeline, and then there's 60 million set aside for a future project. And you're figuring, you're in the planning stage for that right now.
That's correct. Okay. And yeah, thank you for summarizing it so well.
I just wanted to make sure I had it straight. And do you know the timing for getting done with the planning or just identifying, like, you know, because the money has a fuse, obviously, and when you want to get it out and all that good stuff, so.
Yes. And part of this, of course, is also the work that the site that's being developed will need and the timing on that site. So we're thinking it's sometime in this calendar year, most likely towards the end instead of the early part of this calendar year, partly mm-hmm. because we're also trying to close all the projects we have in the pipeline.
Right. Yep.
But just to make a finer point on it, all the work that Jill has been doing with the state in terms of us understanding each other's pipelines is trying to tee up and help forecast private activity bonds needed for the Broadway Corridor Phase 1 project.
Right.
Just so when we are able to move, we know sort of roughly when those projects could, what year it needs PABs, essentially.
Right. I mean, if you go out at the end of this year, then it's a 2025 PAB, right? Hard to
know. It could be a 2025 or it could be possibly a 2026. We're also working with Metro to forecast the need for private activity bonds and working with Home Forward with the housing authorities to see what is the overall landscape for private activity bonds. So it's a little unclear right now as to what is, if we call it real pipeline versus sort of pipeline that folks have maybe put in a request.
Yeah, where pipeline they have, versus pipe dream.
Thank you for being so diplomatic, Steph.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, that is a big consideration. Well, that's great that you guys are actually looking far enough ahead at that, because that is the real thing. Yeah.
And as okay. Molly said, you know, with the alignment of resources, we already saw the Governor Kotek's budget or request. If that comes to pass, the request for private activity bonds will also increase tremendously.
Oh, I know, right? Seriously.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a good question. Okay. Thank you.
Do you have anything, Steph, before we close out? And close out the meeting.
No, okay. Just thank you. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Well, we thank everybody for coming to the May PHAP meeting. Our next meeting that's on the agenda is Tuesday, September 5th. So for anybody on this call, that's when our next official PHAP meeting is going to be. And Jess and Leslie will let us know about the fall retreat. And with that, you guys have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Felicia.
Bye, everyone.
Right.